you by surprise there, so I have to reset my little computer here because we're on the air in Charlotte, North Carolina, here at the ACC tournament, getting ready for the call of the semifinal games, which you'll hear on ESPN Louisville. Bill Rosinski and I will have the call. Great, great week of fun. So this is a great setting for it. And it's also the hometown now, the adopted hometown of our next guest from ESPN, Paul Biancardi, who joins us right now. And Paul, I got to tell you, I haven't been in Charlotte in quite a while, and the city's all right, man. It's getting its stuff together. This is a great venue for this. We're not back here for a long time. I don't know when we come back here, but I was a little skeptical at first. But, man, oh, man, this is a great setup. Where the tournament where the arena is, I'm told, by Bill Rosinski, is called Uptown Charlotte. I did not know that, but it's an awful good place to have this thing. So how far away do you live from here?
I live about 20 minutes away, and I absolutely love the city of Charlotte. It's been very progressive over the years, and it's not downtown. You have to say it's uptown.
Yeah, uptown Charlotte.
Now,
that's what Bill told me.
You're in Charlotte, and I'm in Burlington, Vermont. Now, there's something wrong with that.
I get
that.
And may I ask what you're doing there?
I'm calling the America East Championship tomorrow morning, 11 a.m., Vermont and UMBC. A rematch of last year.
Ah, there we go. Yeah, very nice. So Vermont, Louisville had them on their schedule, so I guess to some degree they're rooting for them. But UMBC, of course, was the drama team from last year. See if they can get back to the tournament. So that should be fun. It's always dramatic when it's basically a one-bid league, right? Or they're not going to get at-large anybody, are they?
No, it's an absolute one-bid league. And Vermont was the regular season champs, and UMBC is going to challenge them again. And if they win it again, UMBC, they would be winning it not only 2 years in a row, but in the home court of Vermont, which is, we both know, difficult to do.
Yes, it is. I appreciate you being with us. I want to talk about Keon Brooks. That's the main thing I want to talk to you about. He makes his decision tonight. But I have to tell you the truth, and I'm not being sarcastic when I say this. We were talking about, it's not the kid's fault. I mean, it's not. But, you know, we were mentioning that he was going to go to the IU apparently and change his mind. We'll get to the whole story. But, you know, it's another big story because a kid changed his mind. And I was thinking, oh, my God, you know, because the recruiting picture. And I realize you do a great job with integrity of describing it and everything else. But to me, the fact that, you know, because I guess Indiana's not playing that well, he changed his mind. I got to be honest with you, Paul. The stuff that's gone on, I just visited my dear friend Gary Edwards, who's the coach at Francis Marion. They are in the NCAA Division II tournament, which is going on here in Charlotte. I'm going to actually get to see him play Saturday. They're at Queens, which has some nice facilities over there. Queens is the number one seed in this region in Division II. And we were talking about guys that we know in the business, and one of the guys who came up was a guy you tweeted about, Tony Shaver at William & Mary, who goes, what was it, like 61-42 in the league in his tenure there, and they still fire the guy. It's William & Mary, for God's sake. I mean, do they have any idea of the history in that league? And I mean, that's an incredible record in that conference. And it's just, I don't know, it's with everything that's gone on with the admission scandals around the country and watching good people who are at the mercy of clueless administrators. And I guess it's true in any walk of life. Some guy who sells widgets, if his boss is a jackass, he's at his mercy. But I don't know, it's just hard to watch. I don't know, because the money's gotten so great. I don't know if that's what it is, but I don't know. It's always been a goofy business, but it didn't seem quite so vile when you and I got in it years ago, and it's got me a little bit sad about that. So, I mean, I don't even know Tony Shaver. When I was at Catholic, a Division III school, he was in Hampton, Sydney, so I knew of him, and I coached, I guess, in a tournament with him once. But I don't know, it just strikes me as people are awfully cavalier about other people's lives, and that's, you know, changing minds. Like now Archie Miller, everybody's ready to kill this guy because Indiana wasn't that good this year, and I still think he's a good man and a good coach, but we're ready. That's it. He stinks, and everybody is, you know, ready to move back the moving van up. I don't know. It's just, it's not always easy to keep your equilibrium.
No, and you've said a lot that has to do with a lot in the profession. Look, it's not what you've done for me lately. It's what are you going to do for me next? And that's where we are in college athletics. The money's big, Bob, and that's why people make changes. That's why people make decisions so quickly. The media is bigger than it's ever been before. You have linear TV. You have digital TV. digital games. The social media aspect is out of control, and it's only going to get bigger, but you have to embrace that at the same time. I think administrators, and there's a new administrator at William & Mary, I believe. It's a woman. She's been there a couple of years. But I think what happens with a lot of administrators is they look at the conference tournament and they say, why not us? And instead of looking at the coach and the program, I wonder why they don't say, what could we do better to help that coach succeed? And sometimes when you make a change, it's very dangerous. You know, you got to be careful what you wish for. Tony Schaefer, when you win 16, 20 games at William & Mary, it's like winning 30 games anywhere else.
It is. It absolutely
is.
And this
year, Bob, was the first time in 6 years, that Tony Schaefer had a less than 500 record at William & Mary. I mean, that program's history is awful. And what he's done is he's done more than just compete. He's won. And when you have a conference record where you're winning overall, I think you've done a fabulous job. Fans and people that have never been a college coach, when you go coach in your conference and you finish your career with a winning record in your career, you've done an excellent job. Look at a lot of these coaches around the conferences. You know, sometimes they take new jobs and you know, they got to rebuild. But overall, look at somebody's career 20 years down the line. See if they had a winning record in their conference. It's hard to do. Schaefer's going to get a job quickly again.
All right, let's move on to the real topic du jour. What is the you anticipate Brooks announcing for UK tonight? Is that what's going on? Give me a little bit of the history and how this story became kind of front and center.
Well, I mean, you know, he's been, I think in his mind and the people around him, he's been, you know, it's like been a table tennis game going back and forth between IU and Kentucky. And you mentioned it earlier. Sometimes kids just look at the slightest thing on the surface. I'm not saying that Keon Brooks is, but the slightest thing on the surface is, well, Indiana's not really having a good season. They have Romeo Langford, and it's not really worked out, and they're not going to the tournament, possibly. And then you look at Kentucky, and things are great, and the team got better during the season. That's all true. But when you go to college next year, the roster is going to be different. So it's hard to judge, in my mind, on what a team's doing right now, because it's going to be a different team when you get there next year. So to me, it's about, do I trust the coach? And who can put me in the best position to succeed and playing time, and how am I going to be utilized? Those are the basic questions for all these top players. I mean, make no mistake about it, whether it's Keon Brooks, Isaiah Stewart, and Tyrese Maxey, or any of those guys coming into Louisville next year, even Samuel Williamson, they all want to know how they're going to be utilized, how many minutes, how many shots. I mean, it gets to a point where you have to, as a coach, be careful not to be promising things to players, because at the end of the day, the player has to go there and earn whatever he gets. So you're asking me which way he's leaning. I'm going to say he's leaning, in my opinion, towards Kentucky. Nothing to back that up, but that seems to be the buzz around his camp and the buzz on the social media.
Is Archie in trouble in Indiana? Because now if they lose this kid, and they I'm sorry, Sagan?
Gosh, no. I mean, come on. Look, it takes 3 to 5 years to build a college basketball program. I don't care if your 1 year is a disaster. I mean, he took over for a new coach, so he has to recruit his players, has to coach last year's players from the other team. You don't make $1 million in your first year on a startup business. I mean, it's really hard to do that, right? Most businesses fail in the first year, and most businesses end up going bankrupt, from what I'm told. So it takes time, and nobody has patience. Nobody. Fans, none. Administrators, very little. Social media, less than zero. Everybody wants it now. Everybody has to have it right away. And that's not how college basketball, football, college athletics work. That's not how team sports work, especially when you're recruiting your players. The best teams, as you know, get guys, groom them, keep them, get old. They say get old, stay old. It's really hard to stay old, but you can get old in time. Injuries play a factor. There's so many different things that go on. I mean, they've been competitive. They've been a little bit of a head-scratcher this year, Indiana, right? Winning some games you never thought they would win and then losing some games. But he's not in trouble, and I think everybody needs to just back off Archie Miller. It's year one. Year five, I get it. Year one, back off.
All right, so there you go. That's I tend to agree with you, but that's because we see it differently. I mean, you know, when I ask that, I mean, you and I are not coach vultures.
We both wore the shoes, and so if you wore the shoes, you use the words process. You use the words patient. You understand that you don't. It's not like lightning in a bottle. You don't walk in. You're the new coach at Indiana, and all of a sudden you're just going to go, 25-5 because you're the new coach at Indiana. It doesn't work that way. The dynamics of coaching teenagers who really don't know you that well. Some of them are freshmen. Some of them are upperclassmen. It's putting it all together for the first time. It's laying a foundation. That's what has to be done at Indiana right now, and that's what Archie Miller is doing. He's laying the foundation.
Talking to Paul Biancardi, who will have the call. Who are you working with, by the way? Who's your play-by-play partner?
I am working with Doug Sherman.
Oh, very nice. Say hello to Doug. They'll have the call of the championship game. I'm sorry?
Upstate New York man.
Yes, they're good up there. Good people, upstate New York. It'll be 11 o'clock, Vermont, and UMBC to punch a ticket to the dance as the championship week rolls on. Listen, I'd be remiss if I let you go without... I get it. I understand the criticism. I brought it up a number of times on the program before that... too much Zion can make wear people out. I mean, Zion's getting on the bus, he's getting off the bus, he's walking down the hall, he's going into the locker room, he's, chewing a piece of gum. He's just everything is Zion, Zion, Zion. But the fact of the matter is, and the game, obviously we broadcast the game last night, and I'm sure, I don't want to make it sound like you couldn't get that sense from television, but if you were in the building, I mean, he looked like a varsity player, as I've said this three times already on the show, playing with the JV. I mean, and those are really great players he's out there with, and he's just dominating them. I mean, you can't even describe it unless you saw it. He's getting a hand on every loose ball. He's getting every rebound. He's quicker than everybody going to the basket. He's finishing. He's overplaying passing lanes. He got five steals. He's transcendent. Dan Bonner had a hard time finding a guy that he can remember seeing in college. Dan had never seen him in person before. And he said the closest he'd come up with was Spencer Haywood back, and that's going to the 1960s.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so I mean, obviously, you knew how great he was. You listed him as that way when you listed the prospects. But did you get the sense that he was going to translate as a transcendent player? I mean, sometimes guys are really dominant, and then they get to college, and for whatever reason, it's not quite the same thing. Did you know that this was going to be a generational kind of player?
I had a fit. Well, he was a generational athlete. There was no question about that. As a player, I knew he was a good basketball player. We ranked him second only to R.J. Barrett. R.J. had a sensational high school season, and Zion had a great high school season. And R.J. just brought it every single day. Where Zion brought it, but not like R.J. did. Generational athlete, a great basketball player, did not know the two would blend together so quickly. But when I went to a practice in August before the team went to Canada, that's when I knew this guy is already on his way to hitting his potential, and it's August of his freshman year. Think about this. He's had 2 to 3 weeks off, and the timing last night was impeccable, as you mentioned. Offensive rebounds, steals, his passing. He didn't miss anything rhythm-wise of the game, which to me, and he stayed in great shape. When Zion got injuries in the past, he would be out for weeks, and he gained weight. Now, obviously, he didn't have that strength and conditioning coach and the coaches at Duke to push him and to prod him and to keep him in top shape. But when I look at him, in some ways, I think about that time off, Bob, was the best thing for him because freshmen hit that invisible wall we talk about, that mental wall where they're physically there, but mentally they have checked out, right? Every freshman usually goes through that sometime during January, February, or March. So Zion had a chance to check out mentally while he had his knee injury, and he just looks fresher and better than ever before. And to me, the one thing that really impresses me, the timing, the anticipation on steals. We talk about offensively, well, they can see the play before it happens. He already made the steal in his mind before it happened.
Yep.
His ability to offensive rebound, when that shot is in flight, he knows exactly where it's going to come off or has a great sense where it's going to be, and he anticipates so well on the glass, his steals, his timing. To me, the biggest thing that I noticed last night is the vision. His vision for the game is uncanny. He can see everything on the floor, both offensively and defensively, and he reacts to it quicker than anybody else.
You know what? I could not agree with you 150%. I mean, because when you're watching that first half, Duke seemingly got like 90% of the 50-50 balls. And a lot of that time it was because Zion was the first one of the ball. He either got it or he got a hand on it and knocked it to one of his teammates. And Jay Billis gave a great analogy. He was with us earlier, and he went to a hockey analogy, but I think it was a perfect one. You know, they talked to Wayne Gretzky, one of the all-time great hockey player, and what made him special, they said, is because he doesn't see where the puck is, he sees where it's going, and he's the first one to see that. And that's what I saw an eye on last night. I agree with all those loose balls. He knew where it was going to be before it got there, and then he's athletic enough where nobody can stop him from getting to that point, and so he comes up with the ball, he comes up with the rebound, he comes up with a steal, he comes up with a loose ball. I mean, and to some degree, and I don't want to start making comparisons, they're very different players, but I remember saying the same thing when I saw LeBron in high school. I was like, my God, this kid sees the game way beyond his years.
And I recruited LeBron in high school, and I agree with you 100%. His best attribute as a high school player was the vision with his size. He was a great passer. Zion is a terrific passer. And in basketball, just like hockey and all sports, you can't take advantage of something unless you can see it. And he has peripheral vision, and he has basketball instincts that are, and passing vision, steal vision, just that are off the charts. But we all look at the athleticism. We look at that rocket ship vertical that goes up, powerful, and hangs up there for a few seconds, comes down, goes back up. We see the girth, the body. I mean, honestly, last night to me, he looked like a guy who was in the NBA who checked out of an NBA team to come down and play a college game last night. That's what he looked like to me. He looked like a guy who was on an NBA roster and came in and played a college game. I mean, he looks fresher, faster, and just more instinctive than he did when he was playing 3 weeks ago. I think, you know, all freshmen get tired. Mentally, they're checked out. The distractions are at an all-time high. And he had a chance to catch his breath and just get away from the game, basically. And, I mean, he looks tremendous. And I think, you know, tonight he's going to put on another show.
You have a chance to see him in practice. What comes across to me is the kid really looks like he truly loves to play, which fans like. But, you know, we don't really know behind closed doors. When you watch him, does he work in practice? Does he listen to the coaches? How does he come across that way?
When I went to that practice in August, I didn't know what to expect. And the thing that I came away with that I was so impressed is how he guarded. He sat in a stance, and they did these one-on-one drills, and it's RJ, and it's Cam, and it's Javon Delorier. And one-on-one, you can't – he's moving his feet, he's pumping his hands, and you certainly are not going to get around that brick wall. But how quickly he moves, how quickly he moves laterally, but how engaged he was defensively. That's what impressed me. And he made some shots and shooting drills. He made some, you know, threes. And I said, you know what? He always could shoot it, never had to. Now, I know he went 2-for-9 last night. And that's his Achilles heel that's only going to get better, is the free throw line and the three-point shot. But you see the stroke, Bob. That stroke is pretty fluid. You know, he's capable from three. He's just not a good three-point shooter. He's never worked on it. And you know, for whatever reason, people around him didn't make him work on it because, you know what? He'd go in the paint and score 50 points. He'd be like Will Chamberlain.
Yes, I mean, so, that's true. What, I'm looking at people saying, well, you know, he only made 1 3. I'm saying, yeah, but he made, you know, he made whatever it was, 12 other shots around the basket, going right, going left, off alley-oops, follow shots in transition. I mean, it's like being mad at Adam Vinatieri because he doesn't throw any passes. You know, it's like, yeah, well, he didn't really have to. It's not his job.
We can pick apart his game all day. And let me tell you something. When you get to the NBA, all you do is shoot. You shoot before practice. You shoot after practice. You shoot all off season. He's going to be a good three-point shooter, and he'll be a good free-throw shooter, especially after 1 or 2 years in the league. But all those other things, the anticipation, the vision, the instincts, nobody can coach that.
Yeah. Hey, have a great call tomorrow. Thanks for the time, Paul. We appreciate it, and hopefully I'll talk to you and see you down the road.
All right, try to find some good Italian in Charlotte, will you?
No, there's a good place right near the hotel. We're walking over there later, so we'll do it. All right, Paul Biancardi with us, and that about...
Hey, go to Mama Ragazza's. Go to Mama Ragazza's.
Right, well, right there. I got a car. I'll write that one down, too, so we'll see if we can go to that one.
All right.